Money Radio, thank you for joining us today. It's a pleasure now to welcome Jay Conger. He is an expert in leadership development, author of 15 books, the Henry R. Kravis Research Chair in Leadership Studies at Claremont McKenna College, and co-author of a new book, The High Potential's Advantage, Get Noticed, Impress Your Bosses, and Become a Top Leader, The High Potential's Advantage by Alan Church, and co-authored by our guest today, Jay Conger. Jay, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Sinclair.
First of all, let's start with the basics. What is a high potential? What does it mean to be a high potential?
Well, to be a high potential, basically the organization in which you work and in your early career, primarily your supervisor or boss, has to see that you have the possibility or potential to jump two levels from your current role. And roughly speaking, in most organizations that we've worked with or we've done research on, that's about 10 to 15% of the population of managerial talent. So it's actually a relatively small group. And as you climb higher in the organization and the level right before the executive level, that number shrinks to about 5% of the population.
Okay, so somebody who is perhaps a little overqualified for the jobs or shows some real skill at whatever it is they're doing, and the idea is that they can move up and move up rapidly. How does somebody become one? How do you become a high potential?
Well, first of all, you really have to stand out. And you in your early career, you stand out a couple ways. One is really understanding what is critical to your boss's career. And many young people focus on the roles and responsibilities they've been handed. Only a relatively small portion of those are directly related to helping your boss succeed. And so if you want to be high potential, you need to sit back and ask, if you can directly, your supervisor, what do you have to accomplish this year? You, my boss. And then ask yourself, well, how can I play a pivotal role in helping you succeed? The second area is showing unusual initiative. When we look at high potential people, one of the most defining characteristics is they've often done something that no one's asked them to do. But it turns out that something is very important to the organization or to the team. And they just show an entrepreneurial orientation towards running with the ball. The other area you can demonstrate your unique qualities is by picking up things your boss does not like to do but are very important to his or her role. So there might be some things like confronting difficult people or working with a part of the organization that the boss historically has not had a great relationship with, and you go out of your way to do those things and help your boss succeed in the gaps or weak areas that they have. So those are three of the most prominent ways you can excel. The other thing is, of course, you get usually targets or performance goals each year or each quarter or each 6 months, and exceeding those consistently by a good margin, that's the other way to really stand out. So you're always going beyond expectations.
Part of this sounds like you really need to have a good relationship with your boss. And if you don't, that could cause some real problems for someone who otherwise might have high potential.
That's right, Sinclair. And we have lots of stories in the book about individuals who have tremendous potential, but because of a situation where they have poor chemistry with the boss, or they're unable to understand where the boss needs to go, they actually fall out of the high potential talent designation. So you're right. The single most important relationship you have in terms of getting that status is your boss. That changes a bit as you progress higher because more and more people get to know your track record and your reputation. But generally speaking, in that first half of your career, the boss is the most important decision maker, so you really want to get off to a great start with that individual. And that means you have to be very skillful at something we call situation sensing, which is your ability in the first few weeks with a new boss to read their style imperatives. And by that I mean, for example, they like to start meetings right on time. And you better show up right on time. Some bosses like one-page summaries, not 10-page expositions. So you better deliver on those one-page summaries. And then the other thing is the three or four or five things that the boss really has as personal imperatives. And you really need to pick those up in the first few weeks working with a new boss. Otherwise, you potentially get off to a bad start.
So you have to sense the situation. What if you sense that the situation just isn't going to mesh between you and your boss? What do you do at that point? It just isn't going to fly.
That's right. Okay. So in that situation, a couple options. One is to say, I'll wait it out. I'll try to get along as best I can. But before you do that, I always say go and sit down and spend some time with the boss. If you have a boss who potentially is open to talking, take them off for lunch. Talk to them candidly. Ask them, you know, you're a bit worried that there's some initial challenges in the working relationship, and you'd really like to fix those as quickly as possible. And then ask them what you need to be doing differently. So if you're in a position to get the boss to talk candidly with you early on, that's your number one remedy. Number two is to go to talk to people who've worked for that particular boss and find out kind of what are some tactics or strategies you could use to kind of get back on track given their experience with the individual. If those prove to be, I hate to use the word dead ends, but they don't prove to be very fruitful, you may have to literally just wait it out. Now, if it's a boss that you have an extremely difficult time with, and it doesn't look like you'll be moved. So some organizations move individuals roughly every 2 to 3 years, and you may say to yourself, well, I'm willing to wait those 2 years. But if you're not, you may have to leave the organization.
And is it better to move to a new organization or a new area, or is it better to wait it out? I mean, does one strategy work better than the other?
It depends on the situation. So if your boss has a reputation, and by the way, bosses who've been in the organization for a number of years do have reputations. And so if your boss is known to be a particularly difficult boss, then it's better either to wait it out or to try to find a role elsewhere in the organization, because superiors will be somewhat sympathetic to you because your boss has that kind of long-standing reputation of being extremely difficult to work for. If the boss is seen as someone who is a high potential themselves and you're having a difficult time, then it's better actually to potentially leave your organization and go look elsewhere.
There are some very specific skills involved for being a high potential. You've identified them in the book, The High Potential's Advantage. You've identified these as X factors, pillars for the high potential. Tell us about those five specific skill sets that really can make a difference.
Well, Sinclair, we really start with the first one, which I mentioned, which is situation sensing, that mm-hmm. you're highly perceptive in reading your boss's performance demands, and you're able to help them achieve their agenda. Underlying that is that you are interpersonally very savvy, and you're good about paying attention to body language, to subtle cues you get from your colleagues, from your boss and peers. And then the other point I mentioned earlier, which is you enjoy taking initiative, and you're always on the outlook for ways to solve organizational problems. The second one is talent accelerating. I always like to say you're never as good as the people you lead, and you need to create a multiplier effect. It's very rare that someone can climb to the most senior echelons of a company by themselves. The best people are taking the talent they have and harnessing their potential. And you get that multiplier effect. So The second quality we call talent accelerating, which is the ability to be dedicated to the development of your team and helping them constantly improve their skills. And the other part that's very, very important is you act quickly to deal with people who are not meeting performance expectations, people we call your C players. You don't tolerate them. You don't let them stay long in place. You actively coach them, and if they fail to step up, you let them go. The third one is career piloting. So if you get designated as a high potential, you're going to move across the organization. You're going to, in the sense that at some point you'll leave the function you started in, and you'll be given more and more very challenging either turnaround situations or startup opportunities or big projects. And these require you to be very adaptable. You'll have to change your style in certain situations. You have to be very comfortable with ambiguity. You need to be, as a personality, somewhat calming because of the demands that you and your teammates are going to face. So career piloting is a set of skills that allow you to move across the organization and face bigger and bigger challenges. The fourth one was a really interesting one for Alan and myself. We were kind of surprised. We call it complexity translating. It's not one that we originally expected we would find. But this is the ability to take a lot of the complexity you're dealing with in your role and simplify it in ways that superiors can make sense of it and simplify it in ways that your team members can understand it. And by the way, those two directions may mean emphasizing different dimensions of the world around you. So you're someone who's very good, or you cultivate the skill of connecting the dots for others. And increasingly in this day and age, you're a data native. You're able to take lots of analytics and turn them into actionable insights. We also found that complexity translating, people who are good at this tended to be very persuasive as storytellers and using compelling narratives. The final one, which is really foundational to all of these, is what we call catalytic learning. And we found that kind of the core quality of most high potentials is that they're very curious people. They love learning, but they automatically have an orientation to taking that learning and turning it into action. And so they're very proactive. And this actually then translates into initiatives that others aren't undertaking. It translates into them finding clever ways to go beyond their expectations of the boss and the organization and solving problems or taking advantage of opportunities. So those are your five: situation sensing, talent accelerating, career piloting, complexity translating, and catalytic learning.
Is one more important than the other?
Well, if I were to rank order them, for the long run of your career, catalytic learning is the number one.
So that's how to keep it going throughout your entire career. You have to continue to learn.
Yes, what we found, and Alan and I have worked with particularly executives for many years, and we find that many of them plateau out because they become very self-confident in their style and in their way of looking at the world. And as a result, they're often blindsided by dynamics that are happening inside the organization or on the marketplace that they are not able to see because in some ways they've stopped learning.
Yeah.
They've stopped being curious.
These are skills that have to be developed. And, you know, it's interesting because I've heard many people say that they have to set aside time to learn something new each and every week. And that's something that I found among high achievers, certainly. We'll continue to take a look at High Potentials, The High Potentials Advantage. That's the new book by Jay Conger and Alan Church, The High Potentials Advantage. We'll continue this conversation in just a moment. thank you so much for joining us. Our guest today is Jay Conger. He is co-author, along with Alan Church, of a new book, The High Potential's Advantage. Get noticed, impress your bosses, become a top leader. The High Potential's Advantage. One of the interesting things, you talked about the skill sets that are involved here, the five pillars that you talk about in the book. These are not necessarily things that we see in leadership courses. We don't necessarily see them on a performance review. It's not stuff that is typically taught. So some unique information that you're providing in this book. And then as we take it a step further, if someone is trying to demonstrate that they are high potential, they may not know whether they are being assessed as high potential because that information isn't really shared, is it? Or frequently is not shared, I should say.
That's right. In the majority of organizations, they don't directly tell you your status. They keep it kind of under wraps. Now, you'll potentially pick up on it, whether you have it or not. And the way you would know is that you notice that you're being promoted at a faster rate than your peers. The other thing you'd notice is that you're moving into more diverse roles than your peers. So you might have started out in finance, and next thing you know, you've got this human resources responsibility, which means that you're being groomed to be more of an enterprise leader at some point down the road, and they want you to be exposed to all the different functions. You might be invited to breakfast with the CEO or an executive vice president, and you just notice that you're the only one who has that invitation in your team. And you might be sent to a course. So you'll get not-so-subtle clues that potentially you are a high potential.
You're receiving additional support above and beyond, but there can be problems if you don't know. And how actually does a company go about assessing high potential? It seems as if it's really rather subjective in many circumstances.
It is. And the good news about that is it means that you can potentially influence it more directly than you would imagine. But that also goes back to an earlier question you asked about the boss who you don't get along with, and you're going to get a very negative, subjective interpretation of your potential. So it gives you some advantages, the subjectivity, but it also has a element of risk if you have a chemistry clash or performance standards clash with the boss. There are tools that are used, and particularly in large corporations, there are assessment centers, there are inventories. There are also interviews with peers and bosses' bosses, which are used as you go up in the organization to get more points of perspective on you. And those are actually very important. And in some ways, you'd like to be in a company that does that because it's not completely reliant on your immediate boss, whether or not you possess potential. And these other forms of finding out about your potential allow for more objectivity, which, again, if you possess a lot of potential, work to your advantage. But there is a slight disadvantage. You could just have a great relationship with your boss, so they rate you high, but the assessments and other points of view actually don't rate you very high, in which case you probably won't be in the pool.
Understanding, though, that there is an assessment process going on and some of the different factors that may weigh on it, even though it may be very subjective, is a tremendous advantage in and of itself. And I think that that's part of what this book does. And it does it with a lot of really intriguing research behind it. The High Potential's Advantage, that's the title. The High Potential's Advantage, Get Noticed, Impress Your Bosses, and Become a Top Leader, by Alan Church and our guest today, Jay Conger. Jay, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Sinclair, thank you. I've enjoyed our conversation.